Last week we began our introduction to our new book of Joshua for our sermon series. A strong and courageous devotion is what I am calling this sermon series. As you might be able to tell from our scripture reading today, that phrase gets repeated quite a bit in the earliest parts of Joshua and then is lived out in the book of Joshua. One more step before we get into the text of Joshua is, how many of you are geographical experts of the Middle East? Yeah, me neither. All right, I know I was realizing not that long ago, like, as it relates to the Bible around the Mediterranean Sea, I'm pretty decent, but I always forget everything else around the Mediterranean Sea. And so I have some maps. How many people love maps? And okay, lots of people liking maps. So we are going to take a little bit of time to describe what is up here. And if you don't like maps, we'll get to something other than maps here in a little bit. But as the children and adults that were participating saying about the land of Canaan, 12 men went to spy on Canaan, which is what we saw last week. Moses sent 12 spies in. 10 were bad is a little oversimplification for the song. It needs to fit a certain meter. They gave a bad report, okay? It's not necessarily saying bad person. They gave a bad taste in people's mouths about their ability to take the land. Okay, so just a little disclaimer there. But two, Joshua and Caleb said, if our God's given us the land, I don't see what the debate is. Let's just go take it. But they were the only two that gave that report, and they rebelled against God and got sent into the wilderness. So I'm going to need to turn, just so I don't mess up the mic cable. I'm going to need to turn around. I'm sorry, you're going to have to look at my back a little bit. I'll try to get a side profile for you, but so that I can read the map, so that I can direct you properly. When Israel came out of Egypt, that's over here, okay, Egypt, they around the Nile River, they come out into the Sinai Peninsula, this little triangle thing here, right, by the Red Sea. They cross the Red Sea, and they go down to Mount Sinai, which there's always a great debate about which mountain is Mount Sinai. Most people put it kind of down here in the south. But wherever in this little triangle right here, they go to Sinai, they get the commandment, the Ten Commandments. God meets Moses there. Then he marches them to the land of Canaan, which we'll show is over here. They come at it from the south here the first time. They rebel against God, and so they wander around the wilderness. So parts of what we're going to be looking at, this these different maps help us understand more of this context before they before God turns over the leadership to Joshua. So, first of all, oh no, this was working. There we go. This little box, obviously it's a rectangle, not a specific land box, but that box is what we are talking about when we talk about the land of Canaan, okay? When God is saying, I have promised this land to Abraham and to his descendants, and then promised to Moses to bring you out of Egypt and into the promised land, that's the general area. We're going to get a zoomed in visual of there, but I wanted you to be able to see it in relationship to the rest of the world. So if you're having a hard time, here's the Red Sea. This is Africa. This is the Mediterranean Sea up here. This is the Black Sea. This is what we would call Turkey nowadays, the Caspian Sea and the Persian Gulf. So we're like over here, and this is conveniently labeled for us the Arabian Desert, okay? So when they're talking about wandering around the wilderness, it's not that they went way out here in the middle of nowhere. They probably would have ended up dead. But there is an area around this box that is also not really good land. It is what they would refer to as a wilderness. So let's take a quick zoom in view. This, it was roughly, I'll let you know, if you look at the internet, there's a never-ending amount of opinion as to what land God promised Israel, and if it includes on the one side of the river or not on the other side of the river, or if it includes this, that, or the other thing. Or if you oversimplify your reading, you can get the idea, because one passage of the multiple different descriptions of the land, which none of them are all exactly the same, gives you the impression from the river of Egypt, and if you're simple like me, you think from the Nile River. Okay, that's not at all what that is talking about. It's talking about a little brook that has historically always been Egypt's border. So they're saying from there, so it goes immediately Egypt then Israel. Okay, that's what God is saying in that place. But just letting you know, if you go on the internet and you find a different map that shows them taking over the entire Arabian Desert, that is an interpretation. I would argue probably not a very good one. But we will look at our text today, and we'll see similar boundaries here. This is the area that has historically been known at before the Israelites come on the scene as the land of Canaan. Okay? Now, do you remember where Canaan comes from? Canaan was actually a person. He was the grandson of Noah, according to Genesis 6 and following. Okay? And we won't go into the gory details. I think we've talked about that in other times. But Canaan's father, Ham, disgraces Noah and receives a judgment from the Lord that the Canaanites would be subservient to all of the other descendants of Noah. Okay? If you need more information on that, you can read the early parts of Genesis, and that will be fun for you. But during the Tower of Babel incident, God disperses the people because they wanted to centralize, to get dispersed. And in Genesis 10, is a table of nations, is what lots of cool people like to call it. But God just like, and this descendant, they get this land, that land, and the other land. The descendants of Ham, specifically Canaan, inherit this land. Okay? And that is from way back when. And so this is the area we are talking about. Before we try to go through the entire text, I do want us to look at the text in Joshua chapter 1 because it gives a little bit of borders. This is one of the shorter versions of the borders. And as you read the different places where God makes promise, now this map is shaded in according to the person who made the map, and I went through a whole lot of maps to try and find ones that I were like, this is reasonable. This is the shaded area of what God promised Abraham in Genesis chapter 15. But every time God says, here's the land I'm giving you, and then lays out the borders, it's not all exactly the same. And so people like to point that out and say, like, well, God can't seem to make up his mind what land he's given them. I would argue that you need to think a little bit more with a critical thinking brain, that God has always been working with people where they are in various times and various places. We have the advantage of having aerial shots of land and being able to plot out things. We have coordinates. We have agreed upon ways to describe certain territories, certain borders, which is why we get state lines that are just like in the middle of nowhere, just a straight line, right? It's just agreed upon that this line, there's not a geographical feature. Well, that's not how that worked. They're also not working with the same maps. They're literally like wandering out there trying to draw stuff, and they're drawing things by hand, and people label mountains different names because they have to do it by word of mouth. It's not like someone took a picture of Mount Sinai and gave exact geographical explanation of that exact mountain. It's just like this vagueness, okay? So the things that they can know about are things that generally stay there. Mountain ranges. Not even a specific mountain, unless there's one that's specifically taller than the rest. But they are like, oh, mountains, that's easy. River valleys, that's easy. This sea, this lake, this big patch of water over here. Like, that's how they describe it. And so in multiple of these areas where God says, here's the borders, they're not quite the same. Generally speaking, it's the land that is known as Canaan. Okay? And that's kind of what he's trying to tell you. In Joshua chapter 1, we will start in verse 4 for this purposes. God tells Joshua, your territory will be from the wilderness. Okay, what they're talking about here is the wilderness down here, sometimes called the wilderness of Sin or Zin, depending on what your accent is like. Also the Negev, basically where nobody wants to live down here, to the Wadi of Egypt right there. So your southern corner is the wilderness, okay? Most people aren't going to fight you for that except the Amalekites, which Joshua had already defeated the first time they were trying to go to land, okay? So from the wilderness down in that corner and to Lebanon. So he just gave us the south corner. The Lebanon is up here, and here, depending on what shape you draw there, is in general the mountain range on the bottom half of that country was recognized as the southern part of the mountain ranges. So God's saying you can have from the desert all the way up to the mountain ranges where Lebanon is. Well, there's a lot of people living here. And God's like, yeah, but I'm giving you that land. Okay? And then it says to the river Euphrates. Okay? So the river Euphrates over here is in Iraq. That takes a big curve way over there, okay? So that leads to some people, if you read from the Nile to the Euphrates, they think you get everything from here over to here, everything there, okay? But as you can see, the Euphrates comes up here, and as you were just at the boundary, the Lebanon mountains here up in the north, you can have the mountains of Lebanon all the way to where the river hits, because the river is an easily identified space. You're like, okay, so you can have to the Euphrates. Now, you can argue that God intended them to have all the way down here because the next border that he gives them isn't wildly helpful. You would expect here to here to here, but we don't really get this, okay? In other parts of Scripture, it does talk about this water feature, but not in Joshua. So you have to take that into consideration. But then it says you can have all of this from the wilderness to the Lebanon, south to north, okay? From the Euphrates River up in the north all the way to the Mediterranean Sea, anything inside that box, okay? I want you to be aware of that because as you look at different maps, you might get a little bit confused about what God promised. And some cities sometimes are included, sometimes they're not included. Sometimes the border is the Jordan River, and this area shaded in green is not included in that promise. And so it can get confusing. We will address that more and more as needed, but you can talk to me later about that. Again, here's the box where we're going to zoom in because this is where most of the action of Joshua takes place. That northeast corner begins to take place in the kingdom of David and Solomon. That's when they begin to go north into that border. Although by the end of Joshua, they have not inhabited that land. God has said, you can have it, even though they don't take it. And a lot of times, pastors, preachers, and even if you're studying the Bible, think that that's some great shortfall. I would argue that that's not necessarily the case. It does eventually become Israelite land. During Solomon, even if it's just for a brief period of time, that it is their land, whether they choose to use it or not. And I don't think it's a great failure of them not to take the northern part because they didn't need it when they first came in. They all settled just fine in this little rectangle here. So moving on, here is the map of that little box-in area. So down here is that Wadi, the Kadesh Barnea, which you'll see lots of times mentioned as the southernmost part of Israel. Oops. There you go. The southernmost part here. And then here is where the Israelites wander. They come up here, through here, which we'll cover in a little bit. And then they cross over. And here is Jericho, which most of us know because it's one of the most famous stories in the book of Joshua. But if you look at this like me, I can't tell anything about like the land. I know one part's labeled the desert and stuff. But then here's a nice little map that explains the climate, which it helps explain the weird shape of the borders because there's a whole bunch of desert where nothing lives, and so who wants to lay claim to it? So most of the time, when we're talking about the Promised Land, we're talking about these areas. This is the hill country, the coastal plains. Anything that's green, this dark green, is good land. The light green is pretty decent. This is where things start getting a little bit haywire, where it starts turning yellow. And the light tan and the dark tan are what would be considered wilderness. Like, you're not planting things out there. There's not really food for animals to eat out there. So, you know, it's kind of far out there. And so you don't have a lot of people settling there. And as you notice, most of the really good green stuff is near water, as you would come to expect it. And so this is the land that Joshua is being told after coming out of Egypt, wandering in the wilderness for 38 and a half years or so, 40 years to make a nice round number, is coming up to inherit. So, moving forward into the story before Joshua, this is what Canaan looked like when Joshua would have encountered it. Okay, so here you have the Negev, the desert down here, Kadesh Barnea. This is the Amalekites that they fought the first time and beat them, but then they didn't make it into the land of Canaan. All these colors are the land of Canaan. So these are the Canaanites with the seven specific ites that live in there, like the Jebusites, the Hittites, and they're Amorites. But there's also this area of the Amorites over here. There's Ammon, Moab, and Edom, okay? In Deuteronomy chapter 2, while the Israelites are going through the east side of the Jordan River, because they try to go and land here, they didn't succeed, they wander around the wilderness for 40 years, they come up this way. There is a well-known King's Highway there, where people would travel, and so they're walking through the wilderness and into countries that are along this path here, a nice big trade route from Egypt up to the north. So they come across these three, and God specifically tells them in Deuteronomy 2 that they are not to show any hostility to three specific countries. Why? Because he had promised them, those three other countries, the land that they had, and he actually displaced giants in order for them to inherit that land. You might not be, again, a big Bible memorized kind of thing, but Edom are the descendants of Esau, who is the brother of Jacob, and Jacob's the younger brother, Esau's the older brother. Esau sells his birthright, Jacob tricks his dad into giving him the promise, and God, seeing that wrong being done to Esau, says, I'll still make you a great people, even though Esau didn't really respect God all that much, and so God gives them this land, in which is labeled in that, well, it's not maroon, this bottom color here. This is Edom, and then the other countries of Moab and Ammon are the descendants of Lot that he has with his daughters, which is another awkward story in Genesis. But because of the promise that God made to Abraham and then the additional promise that he makes to Lot and his descendants, God also drives out the Rephaim and all this other names for giants, more or less. He drives out giants and tells Ammon and Moab, you can have this land. So God says, while you're walking through here, don't show them any hostility. He even goes so far as to say, I'm not giving you an inch of their land. Okay, so when we look at that map previously where it says, like, here's the promised land, God specifically says, during this time period, you're not getting Edom, Moab, or Ammon. I've already made promises to them as a people, which is pretty cool. We'll cover a little bit of that today. So then, this is what it looks like. But in Deuteronomy chapter 3, as well as in Numbers 21, Israel does make their northern journey, goes here, crosses the Ammon River, asks permission from King Sihon and Og to let them walk through here. They're not going to take any of their land. They're not going to eat. They're not going to wander off the road. They just want to walk, because that's what they're doing for 38 and a half to 40 years, is just walking around. But Sihon and Og refuse to allow them to walk through their land, even with the promise that they wouldn't do anything. And so what happens is that God then says, okay, fine. I don't have any lasting covenant with those people. Take every square inch you can take. And so what happens is, even before Joshua comes in, this bluish shape here gets turned into Israel, which is now represented in light green. So before Moses dies, Israel actually already inherits land, much in the same sort of discussion of conquest language. If you go read Deuteronomy chapter 3, it uses the same sort of language, take it all, don't leave anyone alive, all of these kind of words, which we will address in the book of Joshua as well. But safe to say, even before Joshua is the leader, Israel has already begun conquesting the land that God is giving them. Now, this part of the land, which you might see it come up in political conversation, is called the Transjordan. It is not the west side of the river here. Here's the Jordan River, the west side. It's the east side. But God here tells Moses, take the land from the Amorites. But they don't get all the land, because they don't get it from Ammon. They don't get any from Moab. They don't get any from Edom. Okay? But they do inherit some of the land. And during this process, Moses allots this green portion to 2.5 tribes. Manasseh apparently is a very large tribe, and so it gets split in half. Half of it's on the western side of the Jordan River, half of it's on the eastern side, but also to Reuben and Gad, they raised a bunch of livestock. And from the previous map, this area, one, doesn't have as steep of mountains, but it's also just great land for them to farm animals. And so these 2.5 tribes tell Moses, you know, it'd be great. I know this isn't like the promised land that we're supposed to be getting necessarily, that like we're not done doing that, but like, could we have this land since we now have extra land? And Moses says, sure, but you need to go over the Jordan when everybody else goes and help fight to secure the rest of the land. And so that's the situation that we find ourselves in. So right before our text, Joshua starts with after the death of Moses. So when God tells Moses, you can't enter the land, but we're going to let you see it, he goes to Mount Nebo, circled in yellow, and he goes and he looks towards Jericho and into the land, and God says, this is the land that I'm taking my people into and giving them, and then Moses passes away, and Joshua becomes a leader. So, with all of that in mind, Joshua 1, after the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, who had been Moses' assistant. And he says this. This is what God says. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, if you don't remember that text, Moses like goes up to the mountain and then like just disappears. You know that one time when Moses was up on the mountain receiving the law and you know he was up there for 40 days? They were like, well, maybe Moses died. Well, this time that's exactly what God does. Moses goes up a mountain. They're all prepared for it because Moses has already commissioned Joshua. But Moses doesn't come back. God comes to Joshua and says, Moses, my servant, is dead. So now that the time of the wandering, now that everything has come to fruition, we're now on the border. You already have some land that I have allotted to you on the eastern side of the river. Get up and prepare the people to cross over the Jordan into the land that I am giving the Israelites. I have given you every place where the sole of your foot treads, just as I promised Moses. And then the verse about the territory from the wilderness to this Lebanon, to the great river Euphrates, all of the land of the Hittites west to the Mediterranean Sea. No one will be able to stand against you as long as you live. I will be with you just as I was with Moses. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Our text today is a little bit on the short side, but that does not mean that it is not wildly important to understanding the entirety of this book. God comes to Joshua, and Joshua is aware he is the next leader. God comes and says, Moses is dead. You are now the leader, and this is your assignment. Prepare the people. We're crossing the Jordan. I'm giving you the land that I promised. And just like I was with Moses and promised Moses, and I never left or forsook him, I'm never going to leave or forsake you. I'm going to be the same God with you that I was with Moses. There's a couple of things, even in the first 5 verses, which get repeated in the next 4 verses, that is thematically very important to the rest of the book. First, you'll notice the language God uses is that I am giving the Israelites this land. Now, think about when you give gifts. What do you have to do first? You have to have it, right? If you're going to give a gift, you shouldn't give something you don't have. That's a bad idea. Even if it's something as simple as here's a coupon for redeeming for, you know, like a foot massage or something, you still have that ability possessed, right? Well, God is saying, I already own this land. This land is mine, and not the song, this land is my land, this land is your land. Not like that. God's like, this is mine. I have outright possession of it, and I am choosing to give it to the Israelites. When we think about this land, we have to understand it this way. This is how the Bible wants you to understand it, is this land does not belong to the Israelites. It belongs to the Israelites' God that they are supposed to be worshiping. Now, let's think about that. We've talked about it a little bit about geographic religion and theology, right? But the Bible specifically, in lots of places, says that the whole earth belongs to God. God actually has to give, you know, you could say give up, but he gives land to other gods, quote unquote, right? He allows people to have borders that they do not worship him in. And God chose this poor old man to bring in a large number of people who were enslaved in Egypt, who he's now brought through the wilderness. And God says, this land is mine. The people living here do not worship me, which we'll cover all of this as we go. But the people in the land do not worship me. It's my land. I'm giving it to my people so that my people have a land. Because that's how nations were able to be identified. They had their own religion. They had their own borders. So God is bringing them from not being a people as slaves in Egypt, gives them a law, gives them the religious law that is needed for them to be a people dedicated to a specific God. And then they go in and they take the land away from other nations who worship other gods. And this is the context of the people of that day and age. But don't miss it. This land is God's. He's letting the Israelites come in and have it. They're more or less renting. God's the landlord, they're the renters. This is important because every time God says, I'm giving you this land, he follows it up with, now listen to everything I tell you, otherwise I'm going to kick you out. There's always the eviction that is possible if you do not follow the rules. This land is God's, and he's giving it to his people. It is not the people's land that God is saying, hey, I'm happy to live here. He is saying, this is my land, as the whole earth is my land. Notice he had done that with Edom, Moab, and Ammon. He specifically told the Israelites, you're not getting any of that because I already gave it to them. Demonstrating God's authority over all land. He says, that land's not your land. It's my land, and I gave it to these people. You may not have it, but this land I did not give to these people. I'm giving it to you. So go in and take it. So first we have to recognize that God is the rightful owner. He never relinquishes his ownership. He still rules over all the earth. But specifically in this situation, we have to understand that he is telling Joshua, I am giving you the land. And then the second theme, just as I promised. Here in this text, it talks about, just like I told Moses, because that's the most immediate thing on Joshua's mind. Moses is dead. What does that change? And God says, it changes nothing. Everything I told Moses is the same here. It's now being passed down to you. But in other places of Scripture, it says, just like I promised, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all their descendants. God is very much concerned that his people, including us today, understand, I am a God of my word. Just as I promised Moses, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I'm telling you, nothing has changed about my promise. I have promised you this land. I will certainly give it to you. In the act of giving as well is not the idea that you have to earn it. God's authority and his promise is to give the land to Joshua. And just as he says, no one will be able to stand against you as long as you live. Why? Because I will be with you. Just like I was with Moses. Just as I promised, just as I have been before, I will be with you. And then starting in verse 6, we see this phrase repeated time and time again. God's still talking to Joshua. Be strong and courageous. Why? Because you will distribute the land I swore to their fathers to give them as an inheritance. So first God tells him, be strong and courageous. So Joshua, this guy, he's not young anymore. Moses, who they followed out of Egypt, has now died. And God says, now's the time. We're going to cross the Jordan River and I'm going to give you the land I promised. So be strong and courageous. And God makes this promise, as he's promised before, you will distribute the land. Like Moses distributed the eastern side of the Jordan River to Gad, Reuben, and half of Manasseh, so you will distribute the land I promised a long time ago to their fathers as an inheritance. You will be there for that day. And in order to distribute the land, you have to have already taken possession of it. You don't get to distribute land that's not yours. And so he's promising Joshua, you will go into the land and you will be there the day that you are done taking possession of the land in order to distribute it. So be strong and courageous. Well, why do we need to be strong or courageous? You need to be strong because what God is asking Joshua to do, just like he's asking us to do things now, being strong is in antithesis to being weak. Now, God isn't saying, Joshua, muster up all the strength you can get so that you can do this. He's saying, take strength in knowing that I made this promise, and I have fulfilled every promise up until this point, and I've promised this a long time ago, and I'm promising that you will be there to distribute it. Be strong. Because there will be moments in this conquest that things will not look like they're going well. But take strength in who I am. I am your God. I own this land. I'm giving it to you. You will be there to distribute it. And to be courageous, not to be fearful, because he already knows the outcome. But that doesn't mean at all that you can just be a passive observer. This is the nature of how God has always and will always and continues to be relating to his people. His promises are sure and certain. There's nothing you can do to make him not fulfill his promises, yet he asks for your participation. And he doesn't ask for the easy life participation. Just sit around and watch me. You have to actively step with him. As we will see in Joshua, he is telling Joshua three times, be strong and courageous. And then Joshua, next week's text, will be told from the people, be strong and courageous. It's a message that needs to be reminded even to today. What God is asking us to do is not easy, and it is not safe. It is challenging, requiring strength. It is not something that is just easy to go along with. It is something that there is real chance that fear will grip your heart instead of courage in Jesus. Be strong and courageous. And he tells them now the second time in verse 7, above all else, the land is within sight. You can almost taste it. You'll be there to distribute it because I will make sure that that is the case. But above all, be strong and very courageous to do what? To carefully observe the whole instruction my servant Moses commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you will have success wherever you go. This book of instruction must not depart from your mouth. You are to meditate or recite it day and night, so that you may carefully observe everything written in it. For then you will prosper and succeed in whatever you do. God tells Moses, tells Joshua, you know that law that you were at the foot of the mountain that I gave to Moses and that Moses has given to the people? You need strength and courage to follow it. Because it's not going to be something that you're going to want to do all the time. And it's not something that's easy to do. And you will need me in order to do it. But that book of instruction, this law that I have given you, now that you have come to the border and you're going to walk into the land, don't forget that I've told you exactly how to relate to me, exactly how to live. Just because you have finally gotten what you've wanted for all of these years, don't quit. Because in the observance, the obedience of this law that I, your God, who is God over all the earth, who is giving you this specific piece of land, has told you to do. If you do it, you will prosper. You will have great success. Everything will go well with you, as in other places it will go well with you in the land. God says, you're going to need strength and courage to obey me. And he says, don't let it depart. Don't let it just forget to be on your lips. Remember that although they have the Ten Commandments, like, it's not a written type of a culture. Everything they said, they would say it so that everyone would remember it. And God says, do that every day. Think about it. As you go in to possess the land that I am freely giving to you, think about how do I relate to this God who is going to do this for us. Don't forget what God had showed you in the wilderness. Now that you have inherited the promised land, don't depart from it. And Deuteronomy tells us when Moses is giving the law a second time before he goes up to be with God, is that if you obey the instruction that God is giving you, you will be blessed. But if you don't, there will be consequences and there will be curses and there will be exile if you neglect the law of your God. So he tells Joshua, you need to be taking strength and courage in order to obey me. And then he gives kind of a bookend, verse 9, which is one that we all like to have, and it's usually not taken terribly out of context, but verse 9, have not I commanded you, be strong and courageous. God's like, hey, did I mention that you need to be strong and courageous? I'm having a hard time remembering if I told you that part yet. Do not be afraid or discouraged. Those are the antithesis of strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Tells Joshua, be strong and courageous. You are going to distribute the land I have promised on me to give to these people as an inheritance. Be strong and courageous to follow my law, to live the life I'm telling you you need to live so that you can prosper. Be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid or discouraged because I am with you wherever you wander in here. Just as I was with you in the desert, I am with you in this land. Take strength and courage from the fact that I will be with you wherever you go. Now, I think what is interesting, maybe this first one in verse 6, be strong and courageous, for you will distribute the land, has a little bit of underlying here. But these three times God tells Joshua, the leader of the people, says, you need to go prepare the people. God's preparing the leader first. But the first time he says, be strong and courageous, the second time he says, be strong and courageous, and the third time, I feel like God like missed something. Does anyone else feel like that? Joshua is the leader who has military experience, who is going to be leading a whole bunch of people who have been wandering around the wilderness for the last four decades into a land where people live. And as we saw last week, not just normal people, just like living out in the open. They have fortified cities all over the place. They've got astronomically tall people compared to them. And they're well organized. And these people that God's bringing in are not. See, like, I feel like the whole be strong and very courageous thing would make a little bit more sense if it said be strong and courageous. You're going to have to go fight a whole bunch of battles. Gonna have to go fight a whole bunch of people for the land that I'm giving, but they won't let you have. Be strong and courageous because you're going to pick up arms and, you know, people are going to die in the process, both your enemies and your friends, in the process of following after my commands. Be strong and courageous because it's gonna take courage to fight these battles, but that's not what God says. All of those things are true. There's war. There's death. But God doesn't tell Joshua, you need courage for that. He says that you need courage to see that I am fulfilling my promises. I swore this land. I'm going to do it. And you're going to be there. And you will be a participant. You need courage to believe that God fulfills his promises. You need courage and strength to follow God's commands. Because none of us, even the Israelites of this day, are naturally inclined to do what God tells us. We want to do life our way. And God says, nah, you need strength and courage to listen to me. The God who fulfills his promises, you need strength and courage to recognize me as that. You need strength and courage to follow me because of that, and you need strength and courage so that you do not fall prey to fear and discouragement. Why? Because I am with you. I am not away. I am not up in the heavens where you have no access. I am next to you. You need courage and strength to believe that and to live it. That I am next to you wherever you go. That is what Joshua is being told by God before he goes to round up the people, to enter into the land, to begin the fight, to take over the land. It is not be brave because you need courage, you need to get some adrenaline going because we're going to go fight for this. This is not your stereotypical raw moment from like Lord of the Rings where Aragorn's going around. It might fail, but it is not this day, right? I don't want to ruin the whole thing for you if you haven't ever seen or read those, but this is not one of those. God is saying what he has always told his people, what he continues to tell his people. You need strength and courage. Strength and courage comes from me. And you don't need strength and courage for the things you think you need it for. You need strength and courage for what you think is just easy. But it is never easy when things don't look like they're going right to believe God is going to fulfill his promises. It's never easy to believe that obedience to God's things should be easy. It's difficult. God is asking us to be holy when we are sinners. It's not an easy thing, and God knows that. And he tells you right away, you need strength and courage for this. You need strength and courage so that you do not live your entire life afraid and discouraged, because I am right next to you. And in our Sunday school class a while back when we were doing a fearless life, that is what we see. Here's this thing that we think we want, or a promise that God has given us, and then there's a threat that gets in our way. And fear tells us you can't get to where you should be. And this is the promise God tells people time and time again. If it's a promise I made, I'm going to finish it. And if there's a threat in the way, who's going to handle it? I am. And what is your responsibility when there's a threat to the promise that I made? It's to turn to me and say, what are you going to do about it? That's where strength and courage lies. Not in mustering up enough strength on your own to go take on the threat yourself. It is not to shrink back in fear and say, That looks like a bad time. Maybe God's closing a door, opening a window, because apparently God can only open a window, not another door. Like, it takes strength and courage in the face of adversity to not attack it, but to turn to God and say, what are you going to do? Because I'm sure you didn't call me to do that. In the commissioning of Joshua, God doesn't tell Joshua, I have picked you to go fight and kill and take everything because you're so good at it. God says, it's time for me to complete the promise that I've been making for forever. I tried to do the first time and you guys wouldn't listen. So be courageous and do what I told you to do the first time, because Joshua and Caleb were the only ones who were strong and courageous back then, who stood before the people and said, what are you doing? Don't rebel against God. God's the one who's going to give us this land. And God said, don't forget that speech you gave 40 years ago. Because it's exactly the case. I am with you wherever you go. That's where you find your strength and courage, and you need it. And you need it to see me as a God who fulfills all his promises, a God who told you how to live, and you need strength and courage from me to do it, and that I will be with you wherever you go, no matter what you face. So be strong and very courageous. We're going to stop here this week and pick up next week, but early in the chapters of Joshua, chapters 1 and 2, we see promises, vows being called on to be completed. And God says, I'm going to move first. I promised you to this land. I didn't promise you Edom, Moab, and Ammon. I never even specifically promised you this other land that I still gave you anyway. But the promises I made, they're good. because I am going to do it. I will be with you as you participate in it. I will be there. So God says, I will be the one to fulfill my vow first. Next week, we'll see a group of people who are called on to fulfill their vow. And then, in chapter 2, we see another promise made and another promise kept. Do not miss it. The God in the book of Joshua is telling Joshua, I'm the God you can trust. I've told you this is what I promised, and this is no longer in the future. It is, let's do it. Joshua says, in 3 days, we're crossing the river. After Joshua hears this message from God, he goes to people and says, get ready, 3 days. We're going to go do what God said, and we're going to find our strength and courage in him, not in ourselves. Because if we wait for that to happen, we're going to be standing out here for a very long time training to try and take over Canaan. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are a God who is always near us, who is always with us, that we can find strength and courage to live the life you tell us we ought to live, to say no to our own sinful desires that come from within, that is easy to listen to, that you give us strength and courage to say no and to instead follow after what you have asked us to do. We thank you. You are a God of forgiveness who allows us to fall and fail and to be forgiven when we repent. We thank you that you are a God who is trustworthy, because every promise you make, you fulfill. And that you don't only make promises so far out that we have never witnessed your fulfillment, but that time and time again you said, just like I said before, now you may have. And just like you had promised from way back in the Garden of Eden that a descendant would come and rescue us from our truest enemy, our sin, that you did that. And that it worked. And you raised him from the dead so we would know that it worked. That we now can have the Spirit living in us, confirming the words of Jesus, confirming your promises to us, because we have yet to fully inherit all of the promises you have made to us, that we will have rest, that we will be made whole, that we will be fully satisfied in existence apart from our sin and with you forever. We thank you that you are a God we can trust. So we pray that as we move on this week, this month, that we would take strength and courage from you, so that we would not succumb to fear and discouragement, although that is a regular occurrence for us. Things make us scared. We can get discouraged, and you know that. And you say, I am next to you so that you can be strong and courageous. We pray that we would live the life you've called us to, that we would see the results of people coming to know you simply by us trying to live in strength and courage to obey your commands, to participate in your plan of fulfilling your promises. Pray that we wouldn't miss it, that we would be too distracted by things not going well, things looking scary, but that we would put on the right glasses to see that you are with us, fulfilling your promises each and every step of the way. In Jesus' name.